Following program is a paid program that doesn't necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff, management, and advertisers of WBOK.
Good morning and welcome to the New Orleans Imperative, the only radio show that focuses on public education. For those of you all that are listening to us for the first time, we'd like to welcome you to this weekly program every Monday at 10 a.m. where we talk about the public education landscape post-Katrina in New Orleans, the most chartered school district in the country, where privatization is the new lay of the land. For those of you all that are rejoining us, we'd like to welcome you back. If you're transitioning to a computer, you can listen to us online at www.wbok1230am.com. That's www.wbok1230am.com. This morning we have a couple of stories going on. We have Miss Luella Givens that's going to come on first, and she's going to be giving us an update about the BSEE board meeting from last week. We also have coming on the air Dr. Barbara Ferguson and Charles Hatfield, and we will be talking about all of the issues around testing and academic achievement in New Orleans. As you well know, many allegations relative to testing irregularities came out in the Abramson situation. And just recently, we had an article that came out in the Times-Picayune relative to Miller McCoy. Of course, this is not the first time that these kinds of allegations have come out, and we're going to kind of give people a little historical perspective as it relates to testing irregularities and also testing integrity by the Louisiana State Department of Education, who by policy is supposed to oversee that. So I don't think that any of the issues with Abramson or any of the issues with any of the allegations with Miller McCoy, any other school, is not nothing new. There are many, many questions that have come up over the years, over the last 5 years, as it relates to testing irregularity. And I think one of the issues that the Times-Picayune made is can the charters really govern themselves? Is it in their best interest? And is the state is in its best interest? Can it police itself? So I think that becomes a very, very, very big issue, a very big issue. And that's something that we're going to be talking about this morning. There are testing scandals that are going on in several cities. We have one going on most recently in Atlanta. There's also one in Washington, D.C., in Baltimore. So this is like, it's not anything new given all of the issues and the demand and this, accountability as it relates to test scores. So in Atlanta, for instance, the testing scandal has gone from a school all the way to the superintendent. And the same thing in Baltimore and also in Washington, D.C. So, are we sacrificing our children's future just to make sure that we pass the test? Are we so driven towards this whole issue of making sure that everything looks good that we'll do anything to make sure that we keep our contracts? I think those are some very, very, very big issues, very big issues. So we're waiting for Ms. Givens to come on the line. As soon as she comes on the line, we will be getting started. So we're going to have her on first, and then we're going to move to Dr. Barbara Ferguson and then Charles Hatfield with research on reforms, and they're going to be talking about their issues. And look like we're having some problems with Ms. Givens. So we're going to move straight to Dr. Ferguson and to Charles Hatfield. We'll try to get Ms. Givens on later. And they are with my colleagues with Research on Reforms. And we're going to be getting them on in a minute, and we'll begin that discussion. And we'll end the program with Ms. Givens to discuss the updates on the Abramson investigation and also last week's BSEE board meeting that was held. which I think dealt with a lot of issues as it relates to the Recovery School District. And I also think there's some issues that was dealt with last year around school choice. So to get us started as it relates to testing integrity and the issues around testing, testing scandals or the allegations around testing scandals, we're going to have Ms. Dr. Barbara Ferguson on. We're going to bring her on right now. Good morning, Barbara. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Dr. Sanders and everyone in listening audience. How are you?
Yeah, well, we kind of flipped it around. We had a little problem getting Luella on the line, so I'm glad you were available earlier, and I'm glad that you're taking time from your busy schedule to talk with us. But and Charles is going to be on the line in a minute. You know, these recent allegations have come up. And I think a lot of people are talking about it, particularly with the scandals that have gone on nationally. But you particularly in Research on Reforms, and some of which I participated in, have been talking about testing integrity and also issues around testing irregularities before. I think where you mentioned that some kids' test scores were missing, schools' test scores were missing. Can you kind of give us a little institutional history of this whole, these testing irregularities pre-Katrina. And we're going to bring Charles on while you're talking to
him. Okay. And generally, Charles Hatfield has conducted the research recently and released a report regarding the big sweeps in changes in the test scores, you know, and to what can we attribute some of these huge changes in the test scores over just a year or two. And primarily when I worked at the Louisiana State Department of Education as the Director of Research and Development, the state regularly incorporated into their testing contracts what they call an erasure analysis. And an erasure analysis was conducted following at the conclusion of the testing just in all of the schools and all of the tests of the scoring sheets. And the erasure analysis would determine the number of erasures that was in disproportion to the number of erasures that would generally occur. And one of the most astounding things, I would say interesting, but astounding things we found was that just recently, I think, and Charles would know the exact year, but a year or two ago, that there was no erasure analysis conducted, that the part of the contract of the State Department of Education contract that paid for the erasure analysis, they found that there weren't sufficient funds to pay for an erasure analysis, so there was actually no erasure analysis. And then, you know, that should be of great concern to everyone. And then we regularly read about different persons at schools reporting irregularities in testing, and actually the testing being, the irregularities being looked into by the board of directors, which is like a conflict of interest since they're the ones who are held accountable. But if Dr. Hatfield's on the line, if Mr. Hatfield's on the line, I'm going to let him go further with that explanation.
Yeah, Charles, welcome to the Knowledge Imperative.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Barbara,
could you tell us a little bit about your recent article? And then I want to go back to, I think, an article, some research where Research on Reforms discovered that 1,500 children weren't being tested from year to year. So, you know, this is not just one incident per se. This, it seems to be ongoing. But go ahead, Charles.
Right. Well, I think in general, we all want students to succeed. I want to start by saying that. However, considering everything that has been said about the tremendous progress that has been made, most of the information has been reported in aggregated form, i.e. all schools, all grades, etc. What I did with the recent report was simply to look at the RSE schools and using the English Language Arts exam, I believe, and to basically plot the report on the number, the percent of kids scoring at proficiency. Now, as you know, on the state's accountability program, proficiency is defined as students who scored basic or above. And also, the state tends to use that base of proficiency level as on grade level. So given that, I simply wanted to track the changes over time in terms of the percent of kids scoring at proficiency. My concern, and there are, unlike reports that have usually been made, this report consists of all the schools in the RSD from 2007 to 2011 by grade level. And so you have, for any school, any given grade level that had test scores, you have their percent proficiency. When you start looking at changes from grade to grade at some schools, you have what I consider improbable gains and losses. I want to emphasize that some schools report tremendous losses from year to year, first preceded by high gains and then followed by losses. So the question is, just how large must a gain be before you become suspicious? And unfortunately, that question has never been answered. There are, you know, various statistical tests that can be used, et cetera. So I generated that report so that educational stakeholders could actually look at individual schools by grade level and, quite frankly, draw their own conclusions. we're continuing to work at Research and Reforms on trying to narrow down just what exactly is an improbable gain, given all the factors that you've discussed. And let me leave it at that in case you have any more questions.
Well, let me ask this question. When a school makes those kinds of gains, per se, is there a reason to look at it and see exactly what's going on? Or was that a policy of, a policy prior to Katrina that you looked at that kind of stuff?
Yeah, when I was going back in time, but at when I was director of educational accountability, we would generate reports on a school-by-school, grade-by-grade level. And I would also submit to the superintendent suggestions or recommendations that certain schools had made tremendous gains. And I was basing that on what the average gains were given the variance. And while you're not accusing anyone of cheating or any improprieties, it raises a flag as to why you have such tremendous gains. Now, by gains, you know, you can have, it varies. In the report that I generated, you have some schools increasing by 30, 40, and even some schools by 70 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have to ask, if this is reflective of true progress, then either tremendous instruction is occurring, considering that these tests should basically only be used for diagnostic purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But given the high pressure that exists on schools, principals, and teachers, you'd be rather foolish not to suspect, are there improprieties, or is this real? Now, there are so many ways in which you can generate wide gains, from, heaven forbid, cheating to tremendous instruction. But generally, when you see this, I think the public needs an explanation. Why are we really making progress, or are there other explanations?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, this is not new in the sense that back in 1997, you were talking earlier on the show about testing improprieties being reported in a number of cities. I don't know if you remember, we had massive allegations concerning improbable gains on the LEAP as well as the norm reference test back in 1997. So the pressures were not as high as they are now. So I think that considering everything, we ought to be leery at looking at massive changes or gains and losses to determine whether or not this is in fact real, or whether there's some other explanation.
That's very, very interesting. Very interesting. Now, you guys did some work prior to that, and I think, Barbara, you did something on missing students.
Well, let me say that even, you know, to look at it, you know, we're looking at it in the perspective Charles just talked about, but another perspective that I really want to sort of focus our attention on is the fact of that we test the students and we compare the schools as if all of the schools are alike. In my recent article, Dumping Out Students, I referred to the numerous ways that charter schools bypass state law and remove the students who might contribute to their lower test scores. And that's another serious problem, a concern that we need to have. You know, I just was listening to WBOK radio, and someone was saying, you know, we need to address the problems of why does New Orleans have the highest crime rate in the country? You know, why do we have the murder capital of the country? Well, while we might have some charter schools that score really high, I've written an article, the one that you just referred to, about 1,500 students that were not tested. My most recent article talks about how kids can be expelled from charter schools for minor offenses such as sleeping in class. And no one tracks where are these students, where do these students go after that. And unless we have a good education system for all of our children, then we are going to continue to be the murder capital of the country. We're doing a disservice not only to our community, but sort of an immoral, it's immoral to do this to children and youth, to just remove them. And I would like to just give some examples. For example, we have collected, our organization has collected the majority of the handbooks from the charter schools. They are not required to submit their parent and family handbooks to the State Department of Education. There are schools such as Lafayette Academy Charter School, and they can remove the students, and I'm quoting from their handbook, for sleeping in class, failing to report to the office, disobeying the teacher, cheating, and lying. Now, when they were taken over, their performance score was 44.4, and now it's 77.3. But when they were taken over, they couldn't expel students for those reasons. Abramson is another example. They can expel students for not being in the assigned seats before the tardy bell rings, not bringing pencils or book to class, not raising their hand before talking. And when Abramson was taken over, its performance score was 31.2, and now it's at 78. But when it was taken over, it could not expel students for this. And this, I can go on and on with examples. Now, at the recent RSD meeting that the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education had here in New Orleans, I really questioned Mr. Roma, who's the head of that, about how can these charter schools avoid Louisiana state law. I mean, the charter schools are be able to not are supposed to not have to follow Bessie policy, you know, and they have a little freedom, but no one can be not allowed to follow state law, and there is a state law which says how you can expel students. So I asked Mr. Roma, who gives these charter schools the authority not to follow the state law? Which, as you know, Dr. Sanders, because you were a high school principal, there are certain very serious manners for which you can expel these students. And Mr. Roma said to me, and I quote, that the charter school determines what they can't and cannot do. They determine their own discipline policy, their own expulsion policy, and so forth. Well, later, the Bessie executive director emailed me and clarified that and said, no, they have to follow state law. So obviously, Bessie and the executive director of Bessie are not really sure on whether they have to follow state law or not. Now, on one hand, I know that there's a real interest of parents of all socioeconomic status and races and that, and having their kids go to schools with kids that really are similar to them in values and in discipline and so forth. And there's certainly, and I've always said, a place in this city for a diversity in schools, that we need schools that do have certain rules and regulations and so forth. But the issue is that these schools that can dump the kids out, their test scores should not be compared with the other schools who have to keep all the students and take the students who are being dumped out. We need to distinguish, okay? We can't give applause to schools such as Ben Franklin, Lusher, and Easton for being such wonderful charter schools when they were wonderful even before they became charter schools because they can remove students.
But we
need to put them in a category and say, all right, these are magnet schools. They're wonderful. We don't want to remove them from our city. We want to keep them. We want to applaud them. But at the same time, we need to look at the other schools and say, these are the other schools that are educating all of the children.
Gotcha.
And we need to look at their test scores and give them the money that is intended to educate all the children, the disadvantaged and the at-risk.
Okay. Let's do a little housekeeping. You're listening to Dr. Barbara Ferguson and Charles Hatfield, my colleagues from Research on Reforms, and they're talking about testing irregularities and student achievement. And if you have a question, you can call in at 504-260-9265. That's 504-260-9265. If you're transitioning to a computer, you can listen to us online at WBOK1230AM.com. That's WBOK1230AM.com. So I have a question for both of you guys. How, you know, moving forward, given the fact that we have a lot of private contractors that they call charter schools that are provided a public service that they call public education, how do we move forward in ensuring that these that there is some testing integrity at each school? Should the, you know, one of the questions that's raised by Mike Desitel, should the charters themselves investigate it? Is it in their best interest? Would they be biased or unbiased? Or even can the state investigate? And what are some of the kinds of things that you guys would like to see in terms of reporting of numbers, investigating, let's take, for instance, drops or whatever, or erasures? You know, there are some things that we can put in place to ensure that we know whether or not it's working according to Louisiana standards.
Let me just say that the state does, in fairness to the state, don't kill me, there's a pretty, pretty rigid security policy. The question is, to what extent is it administered at the local school level, at some school level? I really have a problem when you have, based on this recent article of Miller McCoy, I believe, that the testing coordinator presented evidence of suspected irregularities and concluded probably that it occurred. Now, the board of directors, as I understand it, investigated themselves and said no irregularities were formed. So given their autonomy, I think that there should be more oversight over charter schools, especially when it comes to investigating irregularities. Now, in terms of reporting, and Renaud, you and I have talked about this at length, we can talk about gains and losses in terms of scores, but what we really need to do is basically, are our students progressing satisfactorily as they move through the system? And what I'd like to see the state do is to generate what we call longitudinal studies. So, for example, we can follow basically the same kids from third grade to fourth grade to fifth grade, and so we're not looking at separate grades as much as we're looking at the students. So we can look at and determine to what extent students are improving or not improving as they move through the system. We do not have this done at a statewide level. So we're dealt with we are only provided what I think really sometimes very meaningless performance of kids from grade in one year to another grade in another year, meaning fourth grade in 2009 and fourth grade in 2010. You have different students, you have different, or perhaps different teachers, and it doesn't really say too much.
Gotcha. And I have some other questions relative to that, but we have Reverend John Mosley, and he has a question. Good morning, Reverend Mosley. How are you doing this morning?
I am blessed. Good morning to you and your guests.
Thank you. Question or comment?
I was happened to see for the third time, if the good Lord willing, then the creek don't rise.
Yeah.
The other day on HBO, and one of the things that two of the sisters who are now living in Texas, Houston, was talking about, and one of them has a child that's in special needs. And I don't know if you guys know the answer or not, but and they said they stayed in Texas because in New Orleans that they couldn't find no school to accommodate her child who was in need of special needs. And I just wonder if that's being addressed in any kind of way in our schools right now.
Barbara Charles?
Okay, well, several months ago, maybe a year ago, Karen Royale, who's a special education parent advocate, and I conducted some research to find, and we found that, what the Reverend said is actually correct, that many charter schools do not enroll students that have special needs. We found a great disparity, and because of this research, the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education did address it, but I really don't know to what extent. But what we found was that in the selective admission charter schools, we compared the selective admission to the open admission charter schools to the traditional schools, and basically the children with special needs were the majority of all the children were in the traditional schools. So while charter schools are supposed to be schools of choice, unfortunately, they are not schools of choice for children with special needs. But this is an irregularity that really needs to be corrected, because in federal law, they are supposed to admit all children regardless of what special need they might have. But I really don't know the degree that they have addressed and remedied this issue.
And also, Reverend Mosley, there is a class action lawsuit that's presently in litigation right now where several parents filed complaints of children not being serviced and even children not being able to find placement in schools. That they filed a complaint, couldn't work through the complaint with the Louisiana Department of Education, and they filed a lawsuit, I want to say last October, and we should have them on the program probably in about a month or so to give us an update on that. So an answer to your question is still an issue, Reverend Mosley.
Okay, and I appreciate the information, because it was just every time I've heard that, that, like I said, this is like the third time I saw the special. And every time I hear the lady saying that, I say to myself, wow, how awful this is.
Right.
Because one of the things she said was that not just her, but there were several parents who had kids in the same kind of physical as well as mental condition as her child. And this is one of the things that's keeping them and others away from being able to come back home.
Yeah, it's a problem. It is definitely a problem. It is and it's a violation of the law. You know, that's the big thing. And, you know, you can't have us, you know, we shouldn't be at the point in where, you know, a parent brings their child to school, and as Karen Raleigh has said on here, and the principal said, well, look, I can't afford your child, so I can't take them because they don't want to hire a teacher. But anyway, we got to go to the next caller, Reverend Mosley. Always good to hear from you, and thanks for calling the New Orleans Imperative.
All right.
Okay, we have Johnny online, too. Good morning, Johnny. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Good morning. I have a question about the constitutionality of what the charter schools are doing by not allowing kids in the neighborhood to go to a neighborhood school. And those kids are being bused to other schools around the city, which makes it sort of impossible for parents to form a relationship with the school that their kids are going to, because schools are so far away. Is that constitutional for those charter schools to do that? And that's my question.
Barbara Charles.
Well, basically, the charter schools, as we can recall, were developed under the concept of charter schools that were developed with the idea that children and youth do not need to attend. This was what the thought was, that the neighborhood schools are failing schools. The bureaucracy of city school systems is that the parents have to send their kids to the neighborhood schools, and they're terribly failing schools, and therefore they should have a choice to send them somewhere else. So that was how charter schools were basically founded. So charter schools are supposed to be schools of choice. And but if the parent chooses the neighborhood school, they are supposed to then be able to send the child to the neighborhood school. But in every state, like except Louisiana, that does happen. They can choose to send them there. And all the parent has to do is just put in, their application and so forth and so on. But only in Louisiana do the charter schools get to admit children, not by choice, but by based on certain criteria. So consequently, the very neighborhood schools that are supposed to take the children of the parents who reside in the neighborhood, these children have to be bused far away. Now, the legislature, the Louisiana legislature, had a bill introduced that would give the neighborhood parents, the parents in the neighborhood, the right, the school had to give them the right of first refusal, meaning that they had to allow them. But that did not pass as it was proposed in the legislature because there are many charter schools who want to select their students, and they don't want the neighborhood students necessarily.
Yeah, well,
and this is contrary to federal law, which says that the schools have to be open. Now, the difference is that every state, because education is a state function, gets to make a definition of a charter school like they want to. But nearly every state except Louisiana makes a definition of a charter school saying it has to be open admission. Louisiana says you can select your kids. All right, but the real issue is that the millions of dollars in charter school money that's supposed to go to schools that fit the federal definition of open admission have gone to charter schools in New Orleans that do not fit the definition of open admission.
Hmm.
And not only that, but the funds for fixing these charter schools are the physical structure. Like you can see, some of the charter schools that are not open admission have gorgeous facilities, whereas other schools, like, say, John McDonough, that they're just starting to charter, that poor school is in dire need of rehabilitation.
Yeah. We've got Richard on line one. Good morning, Richard. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Yes, Dr. Sanderson, Dr. Ferguson. Look, one of the problems my niece wanted to explain to me, we have five high schools on the West Bank.
Right.
All of these schools are in walking distance of each other. I'm talking about the New Orleans Algiers section of New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
You have Nouveau Landry, you have Walker, you have Carr. You have the New Orleans Tech School, which is housed in the old Rosenwald Elementary building in the cutoff. And then you have the newly created Nomar School. And this school is being housed in Murray Henderson. And this school, I guess, will be a part of the federal city. I just can't understand the number of schools that we have on the West Bank. And now we're getting ready to put the so-called International School in the old Holy Name of Mary school in on Olivier Street, located in English Point. And I'm pointing this out to see that we can't, we're unable to build a school, say, in the Ninth Ward. We're unable to build a school in other places in the New Orleans, in New Orleans. But yet we have all of these schools. And now, by having these schools, and that's more than one part question, and you can probably elaborate on the number of schools that we have, and they're all in walking distance, and we talk about monies, we talk about funds and those kinds of things, and it costs money to put these schools together, and we're duplicating the performance. Now, what happens if you have these schools? What about the instructions delivered? What happens when you leave from one school and go to the next? Is anyone monitoring on a daily basis, a weekly basis, the instruction of delivery? If a kid leaves from one school and he or she attends another school, is that curriculum the same or similar, whereby within a day or two that they are receiving the same information over a school year? That's another thing. Now, with the number of teachers that we have coming into the schools and the turnover, are those schools being assessed by the Southern Association, like the schools in the past, where it was important that you have all your ducks, everything in order to be able to meet the criteria of the Southern Association? I know I threw a lot at you, but I'm trying to get it in so you can kind of speak to that.
All right. Thanks, Richard. We're going to take the next caller. We're going to let Barbara and Charles answer that. Thank you for calling.
And look, the last thing is, like, we talk about cost, fuel costs.
Yeah.
We have about 50 or 60 buses that crosses that Mississippi River every day. And those buses are expensive to operate. Diesel is anywhere from $3.40 to $4 a gallon. And most of these buses only get 5 to 6 miles per gallon. So over the course of a school year, it's a lot of money that's being wasted, and a lot of citizens aren't aware of all of the packages that take place to do the things that are being done.
Okay, thanks again, Rich. Barbara, Charles, you want to answer that?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm going to defer.
Okay, well, you know, I definitely agree with him that it's just, you know, you can look at the data and see how many schools are opening up on the West Bank, and then the Ninth Ward and New Orleans East and that, they have just so few schools. Even the Douglas School, when it was converted to a KIPP Leadership Academy and that, instead of keeping the Douglas students there, they were sent to other schools in the city, and KIPP gets to select their schools. And how these schools open and their enrollment is really determined by the Recovery School District. And the amazing thing is that when New Orleans was taken over, it was like a takeover of the failing schools. Well, if it's really a takeover of the failing schools, and when you take over the school, if the school is not failing the building, it's the students, obviously, that they were taken over. But yet these charter schools are being allowed to not take over all the failing students, the 9th, 10th, and 11th and grade and 12th grade students, but they're allowed to have these students sent to other schools while they bring in one grade at a time. And we track the schools that have opened and closed, and I'll have to do a report on that, on how many schools open. They open in the 9th grade, the 10th grade, and they never really build up to capacity. And it is a nightmare of transporting these students all over.
Well, the cost is tremendous.
Yes.
And, you know, but I think it goes back to there's just not a plan.
No,
you know, and
not
if there
a plan.
Is a plan, absolutely, we're not privy to it. And it's obviously that some school communities are just being left off the table, you know,
right,
because these kids are relegated to get on a bus at 5 in the morning.
That's,
you know,
right.
And, you know, I definitely don't think that's
and
fair.
And, you know, it's ironic, but when we did the takeover of the high schools, the high schools that were succeeding, Lusher and Easton and Ben Franklin, when those private nonprofit boards took them over, they took over the whole school. They took over all those children and youth because they were all very successful.
Yes.
But when they tried to take over, as you well know, John McDonough, Douglas, or that, they wanted to get rid
out.
Of the
yeah,
students.
They those kids out. Yeah.
And then they wanted and that's how KIPP does it, implements 9th grade. Well, we're going to select the 9th grade students we want and then the 10th grade. But when you take these students out of their community and you'd like the Douglas students and you say, well, go to these schools across the river, that's not their turf necessarily. That's not what they're familiar with. It takes forever to get there. There's no tracking of, you know, looking at these students to see where did they really go. And again, I bring this back to we have the highest murder rate in the nation. We have the biggest crime rate in the nation. If we don't educate our children, there's a direct relationship between the education of the children and youth, the economic attainment, and the criminal history of the city. I mean, the more educated, the most of all of the more, the better we will become economically and lower our crime rate.
And I think we've created a situation that's an exclusive process instead of an inclusive process. And we're really not solving a problem.
No, we're
Charles,
not solving the problem.
Charles, you
we're
have a comment?
Dancing around it.
Yeah, go ahead, Charles.
The gentleman raised an interesting point, and that is when we have a great deal of mobility in the system, Roger, the RSD. And when many of those charters, as I learned later, are looked upon as independent LEAs. So when a kid moves from one school to another, I have yet to see any assessment in terms of whether or not the student is going into another school that has the same instructional patterns, programs, et cetera.
Yeah, it's problematic.
You don't know what's happening as
these problematic.
Kids
move school,
et cetera.
Yeah, it's problematic. Definitely problematic. We got Jacqueline online, too. These phones are just blinking, folks. Good morning, Jacqueline. Welcome to the New Orleans Imperative.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. You have a question or comment?
Yes, my comment is my son attends Schoenberg Elementary School on Grant Street.
Uh-huh.
These kids are going to school from 8:30 to 4:45. My issue is this. Number one, it's too late for any child to be getting out of school almost 5 o'clock. Number two, the parents was not given amount of time to let us know that these kids was going to get out this late in the evening. So by the time my son get off the bus, it's 5:30. Daylight saving time is in the process of changing. The kids getting home late in the evening don't have time for nothing. Eat your dinner, going to sleep.
Now, did they? You said that they didn't inform you that they would be there at 4:35.
No, nothing. I mean, I got a phone call. The kids start on the 9th of August. Here comes the phone call August the 8th, late that evening, to tell me the time has been changed. We was not given a notice or anything. Parents wasn't allowed anything.
Is that a charter school at Schaumburg?
No, it's an RSD school.
Yeah, well, I think you need to take issue with that. You know,
I did. I called the school board at RSD. Uh-huh. I get little information. I called Baton Rouge. I called the superintendent's office in Baton Rouge, little information. They'll tell you to call this one and call that one. I didn't call this one and call that one. Got bad attitude. No phone calls returning back to me or what have we. And I'm also aware that it's like they're accommodating Reed Elementary School because this bus is sharing with them. By the time they're going to get Reed Elementary School, they're out of school. Now, go pick up the little ones, the last on the end, Schaumburg Elementary School. It's just not right.
So your child is also being transported on a bus in addition to getting out at 4:30?
Exactly.
Okay, okay.
Because I was told about the cost of gas. Well, what about the body?
The child that's on the bus that long, yeah.
My child's at the bus stop by itself every morning. Well, what about the child?
What time your child has to be at the bus stop?
Well, the bus don't come till 10 minutes to 8. Those kids have to get at that school at least 8 o'clock because breakfast starts at 8:30. Keep in mind, the first time that we had from 8 to 4, no problem. Cheering at the school 7:15, 7:30, no problem. Now, it's a big problem now. My child is only on the block at the school bus, him and two other kids. Everybody else is gone.
Wow. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
It is.
Ridiculous, yeah. I don't know what else to tell you. Look like you've called everybody. You know, I think Luella Givens is listening
to
this.
Like,
yeah, I think you need to call the news.
I've been trying. I've called for Ms. Givens as well.
Yeah.
She's in meetings.
Yeah. Well, also, I think you need to call. Just call the news media because obviously, you know, the squeaky wheels get the grease, okay?
Yes, I will. Thank you so much.
Okay, all right, Ms. Jacqueline. Okay.
Okay, and you know, one of the problems with, you know, that the parent has such a legitimate concern, and the tragedy is that she has nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go.
To a public school board meeting to voice her complaint, to voice her concern.
Since central office is not
helping. And I mean, having the state dictate and run the schools in New Orleans when they're not even in New Orleans, that board, there is still a board over public schools, and it's the State Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. And it's tragic that they don't meet down here in New Orleans on a regular basis so that the concerns that we have with the majority of our children who attend these public schools cannot be voiced to this board. I mean, this board has no concept in many cases that these children are out so late and the parent is absolutely right. Daylight savings time comes in, they're going to be out at dark. They have no indication or understanding of the neighborhoods that sometimes our children have to go through, or the fact that the parents can't all go to the school and pick them up.
Well, you know, we had one parent that has a 6-month-old baby,
mm-hmm.
and her husband leaves and goes to work at 5. So she's standing at the bus stop at 5:30 with a 6-year-old with a 6-month-old baby in the middle of the winter in the dark.
That's right.
You know, and they have no regard for that.
No regard.
You know what the deputy
superintendent. Because it's not like that where they are. That state board meets in Baton Rouge. They come from all areas of the state, and I mean where they. You can't deal with urban education or plan to operate urban schools when you live in a rural area.
Yeah,
and many of these board members come from rural areas and have no understanding of what takes place in New Orleans and don't even meet down here so they can have an understanding from our parents. Yeah. And our community, that is tragic.
Yeah, I think at one of the legislative hearings, one legislator asked about the kids getting out at 5 o'clock, and the deputy superintendent from the Recovery School District said, well, that's school choice. They chose to walk the kids out at 5. Well, look, we have Walter Goodwin online. Well, let's take his call. Good morning, Mr. Goodwin. Welcome to the All is Imperative.
Good morning. The lady who just got off the phone, she's a prime example of what we've been saying. This latest frustration, you can hear it vibrating. That never would have happened in pre-Katrina in the Orleans Parish School Board.
No.
That lady would have been given a name and a place to go to. She would have had a face and a person to speak with to help her with her situation. And she would not have to be running here, there, and everywhere trying to. That's not her. She's not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
That's what they're supposed to be doing to keep her from having to do all of that ripping and running. Never would have that. But that's the problem. The schools are self-monitoring. They are the ones that monitor themselves, and so that's why you hear the frustration not only in this lady's voice, but in many of the parents' voice.
Yeah.
For that lady, she's going through the right process. She also needs to get in contact with Karen Harper Royal. They may be able to help.
You know, it's just ridiculous, Well, look, you have another question or comment? I got two more calls, and I got
to
get
a little out. Yes. Going back to the issue about schools, I heard Richard and Dr. Ferguson and Charles talking about the choice. See, we went to D.C. We found out, especially here in New Orleans, it's not school choice, but it's school's choice. It is the school's choice of what children come to their school. It's not the children choosing the school, but it's the schools choosing the children.
Yes, definitely so.
And Dr. Ferguson, if you can also explain charter versus magnet and how these charter schools the magnet schools are also being allowed to use charter schools' money to operate as a magnet school.
Go ahead with that, Barbara, and thank you for calling.
Yes, yes sir.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Well, basically, I think I touched on it briefly at the beginning, but there's really a distinction in federal law between charter schools and magnet schools. Charter schools are open admission, and they're supposed to be for the purpose of giving a different governance structure to failing schools, a different governance structure to urban schools, so that perhaps the big bureaucracy didn't work, and they're supposed to admit all the children, the special needs children, all the children, and so forth. And magnet schools are schools that can have admissions criteria. And we all know, and I've always said, in a big city like us, we need magnet schools that can admit students and retain them only if they're making a certain grade point average and so forth. But the problems between what we do in this city is that, number one, we take there's two separate funding streams in federal money that comes down for charter schools and for magnet schools. We need to put the magnet school money with the schools that have selective admission criteria and that have selective retention criteria. Chicago just got a $10 million grant for their magnet schools. And then the charter school money that we have needs to go to the open admission schools that fit the federal definition. And I still know that one day there will be some litigation on this matter, because so much of the federal charter school money has gone to charter schools that do not meet the federal definition of a charter school.
Okay.
And the second thing is, we need to not compare their test scores. If you're a magnet school, compare your test scores among the magnet schools. If you're a charter school, compare your test scores among the other charter schools.
Okay. We've got Reverend Calhoun, and this is going to be the last caller with you guys. Good morning, Reverend Calhoun. Right quickly, question or comment?
Good morning. My question is the democratic process that's being taken away from us. If we were on the Orleans Parish School Board, would we not be able to go to a local representative and just said something about the Orleans Parish School Board? My thing is, are we being deprived of our democratic process by not having a representative on the school system to go speak with?
Okay, we're going to answer that question. I got to let you go because I got to take the next caller. Thanks for calling, though.
All right, Doc.
Go ahead, Barbara, Charles, and then we're going to close this out. We got to get Luella on. Hello?
Yeah, well, I say definitely. I definitely agree with him. You know, I'm not in favor of going back to the Orleans Parish School Board as it was before. I mean, there were many laws in place and on the state level that should have been used to monitor and to, have greater accountability to that board, because I will never concur with going back to the Orleans Parish School Board in the format that it was before. But the college was absolutely correct that we have, with the democratic process and the Louisiana Constitution, we're trampling over that, because it says that every local that there shall be a local school board, and we have nowhere to go. The parent who called has nowhere to go.
It's just ridiculous, just ridiculous. Well, look, Barbara and Charles, I want to thank you guys
for coming and calling, and
we're going to get you guys back in because we want to talk a little bit more about this data just to make sure that, you know, all of this money and all of this stuff, this model that this is working, we got to ensure that it's working and that we're not just moving around the kids like on a deck of the Titanic, so to speak. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have Miss Luella Givens on line one. Good morning, Luella. Finally, huh?
Hi, Dr. Sanders. I'm sorry we couldn't connect a little bit earlier. The telephones just were not working with us this morning.
That's all right, the telephone gods. But you updating us on Bessie Board meeting last week, correct?
Yes, yes. I am coming back to tell you some of the things that happened last week. You know, we had talked, I believe, last Monday about the Bessie meeting that was going to be happening. And you and I were debating whether or not we were going to hear anything more, any updates on exactly what the latest developments were as it regards Abramson. And regretfully, none of that news was forthcoming. I suppose we're going to have to wait for a later meeting this year. You know, Bessie, I think, only meets one more time before the end of the year to find out what the investigation has discovered in terms of the functionings of the Department of Education.
Well, you know, that is really disappointing given the nature of the allegations and also, you know, all of the other issues relative to New Orleans that they don't meet here and neither do they get back with the responses. It's like we revoked the charter and that's it, you know, and the problems have just gone away, you know. So people really are concerned about that. And, you know, there are other concerns at other schools, and I'm quite sure you've heard it. You hear them every day.
Absolutely. One of the things that is of interest, and we talked about this too, is the information that was in the Times-Picayune over the weekend about Miller McCoy.
Yes.
School and the allegations of testing irregularities that have apparently been going on for several years but have never been fully investigated by the Department of Education. And I'm really wondering what sense does it make to tell the general public that, oh, yeah, we know that something went on, but we're not going to do anything about it. I think there should be a cry of outrage because, you know, if this had happened some years ago, there would at least be a criminal investigation going on into the mishap surrounding this particular school.
Well, you know, it's really an issue because, you know, just recently, I think over the weekend, there was an article in the Times-Picayune about Miller McCoy. But all of these things and these testing spins and this, that, and the other are not questioned by the media. You know, some years ago when Morris Holmes had some leaps and gains, they did a series of articles and went and they talked to testing experts about can a school do this, and they even was insinuating that there was some issues here. But here in this school district, you know, it's really affecting in New Orleans. It's really affecting because now these schools, they go out and they advertise it. They got the best scores here and the best scores there. And they have big PR campaign, billboards. And so, you know, are they giving false advertisement? You know, what is really going on, you know?
It certainly makes you wonder exactly what is going on when you have two or three bodies that say, well, yes, we discovered testing irregularities. And then if that school comes back and claims they've had the best test scores, that to me is an attempt to defraud the public.
Well, I just believe that, you know, we have to have some testing integrity and academic integrity. And if we don't, then all of this stuff is null and void. And, you know, the bottom line is this. Are the kids that need the most help, are they getting the most help? Like right now, you know, what they basically have done have just fired all of the teachers, getting displacing and surplusing all of the tenured teachers and bringing in Teach for America candidates and telling us that that's the best way to do that, even though that is against research. But our test scores are not indicative of that. And then we got all of these testing irregularities at the schools while they're already doing bad. You know, by the plan.
But one thing I have to say, though, Dr. Sanders, is that one of the things we talked about this last meeting was the fact that we have at least 700 surplus teachers in the state of Louisiana. And we are estimating, according to the Education Estimating Conference that was held this past week in Baton Rouge, that there will be an increased number of teachers who are going to be surplus as we move through the next school year because of budgetary constraints that are imposed by the state of Louisiana and the latest version of the budget. But at the same time, we are spending in excess of $2.2 million with Teach for America to recruit new teachers to come into the state of Louisiana.
So we have an outside teachers taking local jobs for local residents.
That's right. We are displacing local residents to bring in teachers from other places. And so I've asked for an examination of that information to find out just what we get for the $2.2 million. And interestingly enough, it seems that I have a candidate who is running for Bessie from Teach for America the day after we question the camp, the contract. And I found that to be coincidental, perhaps at best. But we are not going to stop asking for answers to these questions. We're going to continue to raise these issues because, first and foremost, our job is to make sure the children of Louisiana have the best education that we can afford to give them. And if that means we need to stop some of this external spending, then that's what it's going to be.
Well, you know, we stopped the erasures for $50,000 because, you know, we didn't even have erasures for 1 year, and we saved just $50,000. That's one teacher's salary, okay?
And that is
less than 1% of that contract that you just described. I mean, God, come on now. And yet we have all these surplus teachers.
That was not a board decision. I don't know who sat down and unilaterally decided that we did not need to investigate or keep in place the investigation or examination of irregularities in testing.
Yeah, it's...
And certainly we have a multi-million dollar testing program. Dr. Sanders, we pay tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, we pay, to one company, we pay $12 million to print, grade, and do all of the precautionary things relative to standardized tests. And for us to say that we cut it out and save $50,000 when we got $3 million going here, $2 million to Teach for America, it really makes you question stuff, you know?
And I think I also want to point out that we are coming back. I'm bringing the Bessie RSD committee back to New Orleans in September, before our October meeting. It's going to be in September. We will be having a meeting here, and this is a chance for everyone in the listening audience to come out and question some of the decisions that are being made relative to the RSD in New Orleans.
Okay. Well, you keep us abreast of that.
And
I certainly want to thank you and, you know, call in with any updates. And if you hear anything else about this investigation relative to that and even the information relative to keeping our Louisiana residents working, please let us know.
I certainly will, Dr. Sanderson. Thank you for having me on this morning.
Okay. Bye-bye. There will be a candlelight rally of remembrance and resilience to honor the pre-Katrina New Orleans School Board employees entitled Still Standing. That's going to be Sunday, August the 28th, 2011 at Duncan Plaza from 7 to 8:30. All participants in candlelight marches are asked to wear black. That's going to be Sunday, August the 28th at 7 p.m. The John McDonough Community and the John McDonough Alumni Association will hold a press conference on Monday, August the 29th at 5:30 on the steps of John McDonough to talk about controlling schools in their community. Please come out. You can listen to this program at www.theneworleansimperative.com. There will be no program live next week because of celebrations for Katrina and the following week, so I will return here on September 12th, but please attend those two rallies. It's next Sunday, Duncan Plaza at 7 p.m. and John McDonough Press Conference on Monday at 5:30. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, the Gulf Coast sponsors, Gulf Coast funders, I'm sorry, Fallbrook Sandrock Improvement Association, Metro Disposal Company, Richards Disposal Company, and the Richards Reception Center. Thank all of our sponsors and thank you for listening. We'll see you on the 12th, and I'm quite sure that these announcements will be held regards to the Katrina celebrations next week. Thank you all for listening and have a great week.